Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Motivational Intelligence Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson, and as you know, on this podcast, it's our job to deconstruct for you what makes people and organizations successful. One of the things that makes people successful is their ability to get other people to do what they want. And that's what we're talking about today, persuasion. We're doing a deep dive on the psychology of, persuasion. So you'll get an understanding of why, what causes people to say yes, how you can get them to say yes, what tools and techniques will help you along that path, and actually how some of these things might apply to not just convincing other people to do what you want, but convincing yourself to do what you want. So these can be used for good or for ill. Please, please use them for good. I know you will. But these are very powerful topics in here that that will really help you from a leadership perspective, so and a sales perspective. So without further ado, please enjoy this episode. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this, and let us know what you think, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of, all that good stuff. So until next time, please enjoy this episode on persuasion from the Motivational Intelligence Podcast.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Too Logical. Too Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Too Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with. Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to TooLogical.com.
All right, here we are. We're back. What's happening, Dave?
Not a whole lot, Sean. Here to pick my brain.
As always. One of these days you're just going to run out of brain to pick, I think. Did I just do it? Did I just do it? Yes.
Yes, yes.
I think I just did it.
It's a question of how much of a wise-ass response do I want to put out there, if at all. So
yeah,
that was what you just saw was the wisdom of age, you know?
Maybe I don't go there.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, if you still got brain left to pick, I wanted to talk today about, persuasion.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think, you know, everybody can relate to kind of the feeling of, it can be frustrating to try, you're trying to convince somebody of something that you know, or think you know,
right.
And getting other people to buy into it, whether it's from a leadership perspective or a sales perspective, or it's, you know, it's everywhere. We're always trying to persuade people. So I wanted to kind of dive into how this whole thing works, and how we can maybe, you know, walk away with a better understanding of how do we really make decisions? How can we really persuade people? What really influences them? What kind of tools and takeaways can we go? So I wanted to start.
It's a good topic. I mean, you know, it's interesting. So often, you know, what we'll see, especially as we're going into corporations and things like that, you'll have people get incredibly frustrated because they can't, you know, persuade their boss of something, or they can't get the, you know, the support that they want, and so you see a lot of angst happen, as an outgrowth of, you know, people struggling on this front. So worthy topic.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I feel like probably the more bureaucratic the culture or organization, probably the more frustrating that is.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to start in, I guess more of a philosophical place. By starting with, we have this notion that we convince people of things. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate? Can we actually convince people of something?
Absolutely. You know, you can really convince almost anybody of almost anything. You know, that brings up certain ethical, you know, concerns and, you know, and things along those lines. But, you know, given, you know, if you, given time, the more extreme of what you're trying to convince somebody of, the, you know, that you have to use different techniques. Isolation helps, removing, factors which would run contrary to what you're trying to convince people of. But yeah, it's been pretty well proven that, you know, on the most extreme, it's brainwashing.
Yeah.
But you can pretty much convince anybody of anything. If you know what you're doing.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's.
I don't want to say I can, because I don't want to have that level of responsibility, but it can be done.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So before we get into the nitty gritty of it, you know, you brought up a good point, which is at the ethics of it. Mm-hmm. So before we go to the dark arts,
all of a sudden Dr. Evil is coming out.
Yeah. You know, right.
$1 million.
How should we be thinking about it ethically? How do we know when, you know, before getting into how we actually do this, how should we know when we should be using it, using these techniques?
I think a lot of it really comes down to intent. Are we trying to convince somebody of something that is in their best interest, a shared mutual best interest, or purely our own self-interest? And you know, anytime we start to cross over into the where we're trying to convince somebody of something that really is just purely to benefit us, or potentially even run contrary to their own best interests, you've just crossed over that ethical line,
right?
And you know, and so it really does come down to intent, I think, and you know, from that perspective.
Yeah. No, I would wholly agree with that. All right. So now that the ethics are pinned down, let's start broad. Psychologically, what causes people to say yes?
To a very large extent, I mean, if you think about it from a psychological perspective, there are every decision that we make is rooted in one of two psychological drivers. We will make decisions that we see that in some way, shape, or form psychologically enhance us. So if you look at that on a, you know, from a broad perspective, what is enhancement? Well, enhancement could be internal or external. It could be externally, it could be something that enhances our future opportunities. It could be it enhances our life. It could be something that, you know, offers us advancement opportunities or, in some way externally benefits us. But enhancement could entirely be internal as well. It could be it enhances our perception of ourselves or the way that we believe others will perceive us. So we will decidedly make those decisions that you know, we perceive enhance us, you know, either internally or externally. The other thing that the other driver, if you will, of why we say yes is preservation. Really the opposite of enhancement in that sense. While enhancement is about either, you know, internally or externally benefiting us, preservation is much more about, you know, protecting our current stature, our current perception. So if it's external, it's keeping our lives where it is right now, keeping our lives from sliding backwards or in some way, shape, or form becoming, more negative than they are today. Or if it's internal, it's more about, jeopardizing our perception of ourselves or how others perceive us. The interesting thing about it, there's actually been a fair number of studies in this regard. There's a huge self-esteem component that also factors into persuasion.
Huh.
If somebody is... if somebody is more well-grounded from an esteem perspective, they tend to be, their decision-making mechanism will tend to be more rooted in enhancement. And, you know, therefore, if you're trying to convince them of something, if you speak more to that enhancement instinct, you'll move them more. Hmm. If an individual struggles more from an esteem perspective, which studies show that a larger percentage of the population does, they tend to be much more driven by the enhancement, or I'm sorry, the preservation side of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's in, we see this a lot of times, you know, if you look in from an organizational perspective, oftentimes you'll see employees who they will fight harder. So if you've got somebody who's on a commission driven comp plan, and you know they, let's say, you know, year in year out, they, you know, tend to make around $50,000 a year. And then they'll roll into, you know, a new year. They have a couple of big sales they make in the first half of the year. They get to $50,000 in income halfway into the year. And if you sit with executives and you ask them, so, you know, what does this person do in the second half of the year? And almost universally, executives will come back and they'll go, they coast, you know. And why? Because this person's worked to their belief system, right?
Yeah.
The crazy thing is, if you could roll into the next year and that person is now in December and they've made $40,000, you know, for the year, you'll watch them, they'll kill themselves the last half of the year or that last month of the year trying to get themselves closer to that $50,000 number. So they'll actually fight harder to keep from sliding backwards than they will to move forward because they're more driven by that preservation instinct than they are by their enhancement instinct.
Interesting. So, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's probably, you know, it's where, you know, rule by fear comes from.
Oh, absolutely. Well, fear of guilt. You know, the easiest way to manipulate somebody who has an esteem problem is with guilt. Yeah. In fact, oftentimes you'll watch people who struggle with an esteem perspective. They try to manipulate others with guilt very often too, because they assume that because guilt is a trigger for them, it's a trigger for everybody else.
Right. Well, yeah, that's an interesting point too. Is which I think, you know, maybe we can get into a little bit more, but I think that's probably the reaction for, or the impulse for a lot of people is they try to persuade other people, maybe probably unconsciously, but they're trying to persuade other people the way that they are persuaded.
Oh, absolutely.
That they make decisions or what they're driven by without really understanding what the other person is driven by.
And that's part of what drives, you know, we talked earlier about the frustration that people have when, you know, they're trying to convince something, but that person's not moving in the way. And what they fail to realize is they're trying to, in essence, sell that person on, you know, on why this person should say yes to this or support, you know, this decision. But they're selling it purely from the perspective of what's important to them,
right,
rather than thinking about
what's important.
How am I communicating this in a way that means something to the person I'm trying to convince?
Yeah,
you know, that's a big aspect of persuasion, is you know, kind of speaking to that person in their own language, or thinking about how am I communicating this in a way that means something to that person, which maybe in a means that totally doesn't relate to how it resonates for you, but you know, you have to convince that person in a framework that aligns with how they process and what matters to them.
Yeah, well, that makes that, you know, and some of the language that we've used around that is profiling somebody and understanding their motivational profile.
Right.
Before we get into that, because I think that's a good spot to go, but. You know, to kind of tie up, you know, what's really driving people to make decisions. So it's either enhancement or preservation, and esteem being a big part of that.
Right.
If they have proper esteem or grounded esteem, they're more driven by the enhancement.
Right.
As we know, large majority of people do have esteem issues, so they're driven by more the preservation, the fear, the guilt,
right, or some combination thereof. And so if you understand. You know, if you understand those two drivers, part of what you do is, as you're communicating with people and you're trying to convince them of something, you make sure that as you're communicating, you're showing them how, you know, how by saying yes to this, you know, it's going to in some way, shape, or form, you know, enhance that person's life or enhance how others perceive them or enhance their opportunities, and how if they don't, you know, this is potentially how things could slide backwards for them. So yeah. if you can speak to those, you know, those two drivers as you're communicating with a person, regardless of really where they fall from an esteem perspective, or if they're just kind of middle of the road, you're hitting on two triggers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's really giving kind of stakes to the decision, I
right.
guess. Right.
Yep.
Here's the good stakes and here's the bad.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense. So when people are being persuaded, or they're making these decisions, whether it's for enhancement or preservation, mm-hmm. I think, you know, I wanted to touch on logic versus emotion,
mm-hmm.
Because I think we like to think we're a lot more logical than we actually
right.
are. So where is this coming from? How much of this, these decisions mm-hmm. or to the way that we're persuaded is driven by logic versus emotion?
You know, it's an interesting question. In one of our other podcasts, we talked a little bit about the human mind, right? And we talked about, in essence, the three tiers of how our brains evolve,
yeah.
right? So, you know, the most primordial aspect of the human mind is the, you know, which is the oldest aspect of our human mind is, you know, very much fight or flight, you know? So, there's a huge emotional component there. The mammalian aspect of our brain, which is the next oldest, is really the center of emotion. You know, beyond just fight or flight, but all of the other emotions that we feel.
Mm-hmm.
The youngest part of the human mind is the logic driven side of things.
Right.
So, you know, if you look at how we evolve, you know, we automatically are going to default to the older aspects of things. So
sure.
logic is the furthest away from what's driving the decision making mechanism.
Yeah.
So you're right. We like to convince ourselves that we make logical decisions, but it's nonsense. We make very emotional decisions, and then what we do is we try to justify those decisions.
We rationalize it afterwards.
Exactly. You know, I remember years ago working with a group, and there's a lady in the group, and she had these leopard print, very high heeled shoes that she was wearing, and you know, so I'm up in front of the group, and you know, I said, can I borrow that shoe for a moment? You know, mm-hmm. and she kind of looks at me funny, but she takes off and she hands it to me, and I said so. I said, let's look at these shoes for a moment. I said, was this a logical purchase or an emotional purchase, you know?
Yeah.
And the group just kind of starts laughing. And I said, it's not that they're not attractive shoes, but let's face facts, you know? If you were buying logical shoes, you would buy flats, you know?
Right.
You would buy something that had good support for your foot. You would buy,
yep.
you'd be buying orthopedic shoes, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, right.
You know, so it, really it's our decision-making process is much more emotional than it is logical.
Yeah. Oh, I think.
If you can give people the, you know, you speak to the emotion, but you give them the logic on the backside of it, again, now you're equipping them, you know, so that they can feel good about their decisions.
Well, yeah, I think that's a major point too, is what will actually cause them to make the decision is more emotion, but, you know, the logic part of it can still be a tripping point
right.
that you need to equip them to overcome.
Right, right.
What is the justification? So that they can point to it and say, see, I'm rational.
Right,
I know
exactly.
What I'm smart.
Exactly. So now when, you know, when my spouse comes and asks me about this decision
yeah.
or something like that, then,
right.
you know,
yeah.
you can back it up.
I did it
yeah.
because of this
yeah.
X, Y, and Z. Yeah.
yeah. Versus just, no, honey, it was purely emotional.
Yeah, I just,
and,
I don't know.
There's no logic to it at all. No, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
I spent a lot of money and there you know, really is no reason why.
Yeah,
but
it
just made me feel
reason.
Good.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah. So let's talk about let's circle back around to motivational profile, mm-hmm. or you know, kind of if we are making decisions more based on emotion and justifying them after the fact, mm-hmm. with logic, how do we know what, you know, what the profile is of somebody, or how do we know what their emotional driver, right. is, and then how do we speak to that?
Yeah. So there's kind of two different things. From a motivational perspective, there's a multitude of different motivational drivers that, you know, that we all have, which are, in essence, the things that, you know, light a fire in us, or, you know, will drive us. And you can get a sense of a person's motivational driver if you've observed them for a period of time. Different motivational drivers will tend to cause people to gravitate towards certain career paths many times, you know. So for example, one of the motivational profiles of individuals are competition driven people. So somebody who has a competition driven motivational profile, you tend to see them be more active in sports. You know, if they're not a professional athlete, they will tend to go towards more competitive type career paths, sales being one, yeah. of them. Recognition is another motivational profile of people. In fact, if you look in sales careers, you'll tend to find salespeople will gravitate towards one of three motivational profiles. They'll either be competition driven, they'll be recognition driven, or they'll be financially driven. Mm-hmm. And so those will kind of be the triggers for them, yeah. in life. There are people who are knowledge driven. So for them, it's, you know, they're very driven by, you know, by learning and, you know, trying to, so you see they're, you know, voracious readers. They, candidly, you are a knowledge driven profile.
Yeah. That's probably fair.
you probably didn't notice that before, yeah. but you know, you, yeah. if you pay attention to people, you'll notice those things.
Right.
There are people who are attention visibility driven profiles. They're probably the most dangerous of the motivational profiles of people, because a recognition driven profile is somebody who, they want to be recognized because they're successful. They, you know, so that drives them to do better. An attention visibility person, they want the limelight, but they don't really care how they get it. So they can seek it out from a negative perspective just as much as a positive perspective.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter if it's good or bad.
No, you know, and so a lot of times in organizations, they'll be the shadow warriors who will be having, you know, the meeting at the water cooler after the meeting, and you, mm-hmm. know, and selling other people on, you know, they're the kind of the quiet leaders in an organization who will move in negative fashions.
Yeah.
Because they want to be seen as important. They want to be seen as influential, and, you know, and they don't care whether it's on the positive or negative.
Yeah.
That makes them candidly kind of a pain in the ass from a business,
yeah,
perspective.
Yeah, sure. And pretty much every other perspective.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So having a sense of a person, from a motivational profile, it's helpful in persuasion. Because you understand somebody's triggers a little bit more.
Sure.
And that's a little different than that's more of a motivational driver than, mm-hmm. an emotional driver.
Okay.
The emotional driver is, you know, going to be much more tied to those two instincts, the preservation or the enhancement side of things. And they will tend to be either more internal or external for an individual. And internal, external can be either preservation or either enhancement. So, you know, internal is much more, you know, the, how somebody is perceived, how they perceive themselves, that side of things, where the external is more, more about the external environment, in that, you know, is it opportunity? Is it fear? Is it, you know, those, the, you know, the keeping from sliding backwards, the, you know, the loss of opportunity, those types of things.
Yeah.
So from an emotional driver standpoint, you're more looking at, is there a, for this person, is it more of the internal or external locus that you want to speak to for somebody?
Okay. Got it. So for that, you know, for the emotion, so the motivational profile is a little bit more, maybe surface level, meaning, that it's, you know, kind of where they'll light up a
exactly.
little bit.
It's what lights a spark in this person.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the emotional driver is more where they're making their decisions
right.
from.
Exactly.
Okay. So you mentioned, you know, internal or external and it being enhancement or mm-hmm. preservation focused. How do you tell, you know, if, you know, if there's somebody that you're trying to convince of somebody, how do you tell where they fall?
A lot of it is, you know, if you listen to somebody speak, it's amazing mm-hmm. what they will tell you, you know, without really realizing that they're telling you those things.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of get a sense of somebody, you know, whether they, you know, whether they're internally, externally validated, you know, how much effort do they put into driving others' perception of them? Do they spend a lot of time and energy selling others on, you know, who they are and why they're valuable, those kinds of things? Mm-hmm. Or is it, you know, is that something they don't really spend a lot of energy and effort on because they're more internally validated?
Sure.
You know, so that gives you a sense of, are they more driven by an external perception or an internal perception?
Okay. So once you have... and mostly that's just, you know, through observation.
Mm-hmm.
So once you have, you know, if there's somebody in particular you're trying to convince of something, once you have a feel for where they fall from a motivational profile perspective, but particularly from an emotional profile perspective,
right.
emotional driver perspective, what, how do you proceed? You know, or mm-hmm. is there a step-by-step process? Are there different techniques based on where they fall kind of in that spectrum?
Right.
How should we be thinking about that?
Well, first and foremost, if it's something that's important that you're trying to convince somebody of, it's, you know, the key piece is doing exactly what you just said, taking the time to think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, what most people will do is they'll just go and have a conversation with somebody without really planning ahead of, okay, where is this person coming from? What's, you know, what is most important to this individual? How are they going about making this decision? How am I presenting it in a way that speaks to their enhancement or speaks to their preservation instincts? And, you know, and so, you know, most people kind of shoot from the hip when it comes to persuasion
yeah.
and then in turn get frustrated because, you
it's
know,
not working.
Exactly. Because they see it so clearly in their mind. And why doesn't this person see it?
Yeah.
You know, and rather than stepping back and saying, okay, if there's something that's in this person's best interest, and they're not moving, rather than looking in the mirror and saying, okay, the problem is not them. The problem's me.
Yeah, how I'm communicating that.
Exactly. I'm not communicating this in a way that is hitting this person's triggers.
Right.
And so if you're sitting down and premeditating, if this is something of important, it's worth a little bit of forethought.
Yeah.
The
you told me this story probably year or two ago, but I remember you talking about a conversation you had with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And
you listen, you really listen.
I listen,
Sean.
Yeah. Sometimes. Sometimes.
You validate me.
Externally focused. I remember a story you told about Ben, and
I'm really interested seeing where this is going.
Yeah,
I don't remember what the story is. So.
It was something where you mentioned you had planted a seed with him. You were driving in the car. You planted a seed with him weeks beforehand, and then you had a conversation with him about, kind of positioning him a little bit better to accept advice and feedback from you. And you asked him a couple questions. Are you remembering now?
Not entirely.
I just remember being, I guess, and this was a few years ago, but being very impressed, I guess, that, this was something that you said, like, yeah, I planted the seed with him, in this way 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And then I waited and I waited and I waited. And then just kind of found the right moment 3 weeks later. And I asked him these three questions. Mm-hmm. And bam, like he got right there.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that so many people don't do. They don't either take the time or have the foresight to really understand or put the effort into what's really going to move them.
Well, I think I remember what you're talking about. And I think with our kids. And his parents, obviously you're trying to raise your kids with a perspective of what's going to enable them in life, and also with a force field to protect them from all of the negative influences which would cause them to default to limiting perspectives. But if I, and there's many times where Michelle and I with the kids have, we've sat down and had conversations, candidly, I think it's been one of the perhaps best things that we've really done as parents is to have those conversations around, okay, so, what is it we're trying to anchor in the kids' thought process right now? What is it that we're trying to help them to see? And then we'll create kind of a coordinated attack, in that perspective. And of course, we say things differently and from different perspectives and that, but it's that kind of cross-vectoring that I think really helps. But, with kids too, especially as they get into their teen years and, those kinds of things, we've all, been through that, that phase where our parents got really dumb and didn't know anything, and that's the hardest time when you're as a parent, because you so often will see them, going down pathways or grabbing onto perspectives that are limiting.
Yeah.
But, they're not giving you the window to help them to see that.
Yeah.
And that's where that layering effect really makes a big difference. Joe said something to me years ago, and it was wonderful parenting advice. He said, your kids, they will give you windows where you're connecting with them. And he said, but they're rare. And he said, what most parents will do when their kids give them a window is they try to bludgeon them. They're trying to get in everything they wanted to get in for the last month, in the head. And he said, no, what happens is your kids, when you do that, they turn the cartoons on and they close the window,
right.
and then it becomes that much longer before they give you that window again. And I remember he goes, what you want to do, he goes, when your kids give you a window, he goes, you want to be like a sniper. He goes, get in, take your shot, and get the hell out of there as fast as you can,
Yeah.
And it was wonderful advice because, they don't have time to shut you down. And so you can go in and you can plant a seed, or you can, you deliver that theme. And that was the other thing with whether you're trying to convince your kids or trying to convince yourselves or trying to convince somebody else, having those themes that you're working, and then coming back and reinforcing those themes, you know, makes a big difference. And that was decidedly something that we did with the kids.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, let's circle back to, the techniques or the process mm-hmm. of, you know, you mentioned something there with, you know, so once we understand their profile mm-hmm. and, you know, you mentioned their windows, you mentioned their themes, you know, what are the techniques that we can be pulling away from this, where, all right, I took the time, to understand and kind of get a feel for this person's profile. I know where I want to get them psychologically. Mm-hmm. Where do we go from there?
Yeah. So, okay, let's go back to the, we'll go back to the story, right?
Yeah.
So, and I don't remember if this was specifically the one you're referencing or not, but the one that comes to mind when, you know, when you're talking, I remember Ben went through a phase where, it was particularly with school, where everything was like about, you know, what's the quickest I can get done with my homework? What's the quickest I can get out, you know, to kind of play and do the things that I want to do. And there was just a, you know, kind of a general lack of effort and, you know, with regard to school. And so my theme with him in, you know, in that was one of minimums and maximums. Hmm. When I had that window, I said, you know, Ben, in life, you're going to have to make decisions and, you know, about how you want to approach things. And there's really only two options. I said, you can approach things with a minimums perspective, which is what's the quickest I can do this? What's the least amount of effort I have to put into it? What's the least amount of thought that I have to use? So it's that's at minimums focus. And I said, when people focus on minimums, they get minimum outcomes. And I said, you know, does that make sense? And he's like, yeah, I guess so. You know, and I said, the other perspective is one of maximums, you know, so it's, you know, when somebody focuses on maximums, it's, you know, what's the maximum I can do here? What's the best I can do this? What's the maximum benefit that I can gain from this? What's the most I can learn from this? And I said, so when people focus on maximums, they get maximum outcomes. And so that was like the extent of the conversation. That was the sniper shot.
Yeah.
You know, when the window was open.
Yeah.
And
how did you know when the window was open?
With your kids, what happens is there's those they're in a more relaxed state. And you can see in their eyes that they're really they're listening and considering what it is that you're saying. The other way you can tell when the window's open is are they fighting you on mm-hmm. what it is that you're saying, which would tell you the window's closed, or are they actually, you know, being a little introspective and considering what it is that you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, so how much resistance are they putting up basically?
Yeah. Okay.
So that was the sniper shot that I took. That was the theme was minimums or maximums, you know? And then what I would do is I would come back. So in the mornings, you know, especially when I was in town, I would, a lot of times I'd walk him to the end of the driveway where he would get on the bus. And you know, right before he'd get on the bus, I last thing I'd say to him is I say, hey, buddy, I said, remember, focus on maximums today. And just leave it at that.
Yep.
You know, and then at night, you know, when I was tucking him in the bed and I would ask him, I said, Ben, I said, what were your maximums today?
Yeah.
And, you know, and in the beginning, he'd give me these kind of bull answers, you know, or I got a high score in Black Ops today or something like that, you know, and I go, okay, well, that's good. You know, that's a maximum. But I just stuck with it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, so he of course knows his dad's a whack and I'm not going away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So one day he says to me, he goes, I did the bonus question on the science exam today. And I go, oh, okay. I said, would you have normally done the bonus question? He goes, nah. you know, and I go, great job, buddy. I go, that was a maximum. So you know, you asked about tools and techniques, you know, so there's the layering side of things, right? And, and so you create that theme that you keep coming back to. So you create the themes, align it with their self-interest so that they can see that, you know, by, you know, by doing this, again, enhancement preservation, right? Another big thing when you're trying to convince somebody of something, is to, you know, provide them with, overwhelming social proof and, you know, something that they can't debate. Okay. So what does that mean? Right. And so for Ben, I remember in that window of time, one of the things he was really into was, you know, watching these supercross races, motorcycle races inside stadiums. And so he and I'd watch these together on, you know, on Sunday afternoons and things. And, you know, at the time, the two top racers, one was a guy, Chad Reed, and another guy was Ricky Carmichael, right? And Ben kind of idolized Ricky Carmichael, you know. So and he was probably the top guy at the time, and so we're watching a race one day, and I said to Ben, I said, you know, when Ricky's out, you know, training during the week, I said, when he gets up in the morning, do you think he says to himself, what's the least amount of time I need to spend riding today? You know, what's the least amount of time I need to spend in the gym? What's the, you know, the least amount of time I need to, you know, spend, you know, doing aerobic activity? You know, do you think he focuses on what the least amount is? Or do you think he asks himself, what's the maximum he can do today?
Yeah.
And, you know, and so Ben, you know, you could see his kind of little mind whirling. And he goes,
wheels turning.
He goes, he probably focuses on maximums.
Yeah.
And I said, I said, who's won the most races this year? And he goes, well, Ricky has. And I go, so look, he's getting maximum outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, people focus on maximums. They get maximums.
Yeah.
You know, so there's the social proof for him.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, but it was in a realm where he could relate to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the more of that social proof, it's the validation for, you know, of what it is you're trying to convince, you know, somebody of.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that and you know, what that also, that story also did is it really showed kind of the cause and effect or the if then kind of side of things.
Yeah.
You know, so you, if you align it with people's self-interest, so they're speaking to the enhancement and the preservation instinct.
Yep.
You're providing overwhelming social proof of to really validate why this decision is going to be the right one for them. You show the, you know, the cause and effect, the if then, you know, yep. Side of things. You know, there was a book, I think I actually recommended it to you years ago. The book was called Persuasion, I believe.
Influence?
Or Influence, you're right, Influence.
Yeah. Cialdini.
Cialdini, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things he talks about in that book is public acknowledgement is a big one, too.
Yeah.
If, you know, if you can get somebody to publicly acknowledge something, you know, or state it out loud in front of other people, that also influences the likelihood that they will move in that direction.
Yeah, to keep with their cognitive consistency.
Right, exactly.
I already said this out loud, so I got to continue to...
Well, and I said it in front of other people, so now now there's a heightened level of commitment.
Right.
Because now if I don't do it...
I'm gonna look...
Exactly.
Bad. I'm gonna look like an idiot.
And now you go back to the enhancement and preservation instinct.
Again, yeah, sure. So, you know, really you're understanding somebody's profile, and based on the profile and where you want to take them, you're coming up with a theme. Mm-hmm. The theme is wrapped in is as much cause and effect driven.
Yep.
And you're looking for your window to introduce the theme. You get your window, you take the sniper shot, you introduce the theme,
And then get the hell out of there.
And then get the hell out of there.
Bail.
Yeah. And so you introduce the team, you take the sniper shot, you get the hell out of there. And then over time, it sounds like you're reinforcing the theme that right. you introduced.
Yep.
And you're using social proof to do it. You're using right. stories to do it. You know, particularly things that are relevant to them. You know, I think mm-hmm. with Ben, Ricky was, you know, guy he idolized. Right. So he's the perfect one too.
Well, and the social proof also is important because you remember the preservation side of people is. You know, what drives buyer's remorse in people is the preservation instinct. Mm-hmm. It's that fear like, oh, geez, I hope I didn't make a mistake and, you know, in making this decision. And that's, you know, part of the reason why people hate to decide. I remember years ago, there was a gentleman who I saw, you know, up in front of a group and he was talking about how people hate to decide. And he goes, you know why people hate to decide? He goes, think about all of the words that end with the letters I-D-E. He goes, you know, pesticide, homicide, suicide, decide.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, they're all bad things, yeah. you know. He goes, no wonder people hate to decide, you know. But, you know, so that the reluctance to make decisions is really driven by the preservation instinct. It's right. fear-driven.
Yeah, they don't want to screw up.
Right, exactly. So the social proof... You know, it creates the safety net. You
sure.
know, so you're showing them that you know that you're validating why you know this decision is going to be a safe one for them to make.
Yeah. Okay. So you know, and you mentioned something last time we talked, and this was you know it was more personal when we were talking about judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that over time it wasn't so much it was over time all of a sudden you know it felt like the dam broke.
Mm-hmm.
So is that kind of the same process in motion in that you know like for those people that were helping you from the outside mm-hmm. perspective like we talked about you kind of need that
sure.
outside perspective to be objective. Is this kind of the process that they were following and that you follow with other people? And is that why it kind of feels like this all of a sudden is this so over time if you're layering this, is that how it happens? Is it feel like, you know, real quick, all of a sudden I changed my mind? Or is it, how does that process work?
It's a lot of the speed at which the decisions get made, or somebody changes their mind, it has a lot to do with how deeply rooted the, you know, that belief that you're trying to change in them is,
yeah.
you know? So, you know, if you're trying to, you know, convince somebody of something that is very deeply psychologically rooted, it decidedly takes a lot more time, a lot more energy, you know,
a
more consistent theme, you know, if you think about it for a moment, you know, and also, you know, how long has somebody held on to it for? So,
yeah.
you know, our beliefs, our thought process in a lot of ways are like the roots of a tree, you know? So if you've got a little sapling, you know, you look at the roots and they're like hairs, right? You
yeah.
know, so they're very easy to redirect. That's why children are so malleable.
Yeah.
You know, but as they get older, they get less malleable, you know, because
yeah.
what happens is those thoughts and beliefs of theirs, you know, they go bigger and they go stronger and you know, and thus it takes more energy and more effort to redirect them.
Yeah.
In adults, they're you know, those thoughts and beliefs are even bigger, you know. So, you know, we've all walked down a sidewalk and you see, you know, concrete slabs coming up because the root of a tree has pushed them up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a very old, mature tree.
Yeah. Old dog, new tricks.
Exactly. You know, and that's the, you know, and that same analogy applies to us as human beings. You know, so if you're trying to convince, somebody who's 55 years old of, you know, to change their perspective on something that's, you know, very deeply rooted,
sure.
it's a lot of time and a lot of energy to, you know, to be able to do that. It takes a lot of consistency.
Right.
You know, whereas if it's a, you know, if it's a relatively minor thing, or, you know, it's not a very deeply rooted belief, then it's, you know, it doesn't take anywhere near that amount of energy.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's an important distinction too. It's not necessarily that you can't convince older people of things. It's how deeply rooted it is for that person. You know, somebody that is 55 years old, they'll certainly have deeper held convictions, mm-hmm. And it'll be deeper rooted in certain areas, but doesn't necessarily mean what you're trying to convince them of is one of those things.
Right.
It could be still a sapling.
Exactly. You know, it's just,
it all
you know,
depends.
Exactly. You know, is it something, is this a belief that they've, you know, that they've, you know, held on to since they were in their teens?
Right.
You know, or is it something that's, you're right, is, you know, a relatively new perspective that they've recently taken?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, to wrap up, one thing I wanted to do is kind of flip this 180. So mm-hmm. we've been talking, this whole conversation has been about, trying to, how do we convince somebody else of something? Should we be thinking about that, flipping it around and saying, does it make sense to be trying to convince ourselves of anything?
Oftentimes convincing ourselves is Joe is, you know, he's got a wonderful quote. He said, you know, the most important sale anybody ever makes in their life is a sale they make to themselves to be their best.
Yeah.
And so, you know, ultimately, if we're going to convince anybody of anything, it really does come down to convincing ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the, you know, we all cross that bridge many times every day. You know, it's the, you know, when you, you know, wake up in the morning, you know, or you know, when you're laying in bed in the morning and it's 6 a.m., you know, and you roll over and you look at the clock and you're saying, oh, okay, I could get up and go down on the treadmill right now or go for a run, or I could roll over and sleep for another 45 minutes, you know.
Right.
And so what are you convincing yourself of there, you know? Or, yeah. You know, am I convincing myself that, you know, that you know, I'm trying to lose 10 pounds and therefore I should shy away from that donut that's screaming at me in the, you know, in the kitchen right now, mm-hmm. So we cross that road thousands of times every day and we make those decisions. And, you know, and for many, many individuals, they convince themselves of the things that provide the most instantaneous gratification. The challenge is, you know, we know that everything's cause and effect in the world, is that if somebody lives their life that way for a period of time, inherently what they're doing is they're sacrificing their future in the process.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got to ask ourselves, you know, everything that we do, every decision we make, you know, it builds some type of a momentum for us. Is it building positive momentum towards our future, or is it building negative momentum towards our future?
Yeah, I like the momentum, you know, analogy. I think that's a great way to think about it. I think it's kind of in two parts. It's before you can convince somebody else of something, you have to, you know, first believe it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true, because I think it seems like humans have a very good kind of instinctual meter of, does this person really believe it or not?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it seems like that the conviction with which you deliver whatever the message that you're trying to deliver has a massive impact on whether they believe it or not.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, at the highest level of sales, the best salespeople I've ever met are not the most fluent. They're, you know, not the most articulate. They're not the ones who, you know, have the stunning technical knowledge or aptitude or any of those things. They really are the ones who believe the most. And you know, to your point, what people really buy from us is they buy the conviction they see in our eyes.
Yeah.
Because that if they see that conviction, it gives them confidence. If they see trepidation, then, you know, then they're going, well, if this person is uncertain, then why should I be certain?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So you're 100% right. And, you know, and you're right. We are exceptionally good at reading those cues in people. I don't know that many people are necessarily conscious of that.
Yeah.
But on a subliminal level.
It's that gut. It's that gut decision.
Exactly.
That people just point to their gut.
Yep.
They couldn't. I can't tell you why, but
yeah.
I don't know.
It's just not ringing for me right now. Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, in order to convince others, we must first convince ourselves. Do all of the same techniques apply? If we're trying to, so whether it's, all right, I'm sitting here and I'm like, all right, Dave, I gotta convince Dave of something. Mm-hmm. And I think through what it is that I need to, I think through your profile and the theme and look mm-hmm. for the window and all that kind of stuff. I'm saying I gotta convince myself first. Like, mm-hmm. so, cause Dave's going to be able to tell, I really believe this or not?
Yep.
For me trying to get myself to that level of conviction, can I use some of the same kind of techniques that we were talking about before mm-hmm. How do I get myself there?
Yeah. Yeah. And absolutely the same things work. You know, you think about, Benjamin Franklin close, salespeople are taught where they kind of do the T chart and, if I do and if I don't kind of, you know, things.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. It speaks to the enhancement and preservation instinct.
Yeah.
And so if we're trying to convince ourselves of something, whether it's convincing ourselves to go to the gym, you know, or, we talked about a minute ago that many people, they'll default to what is most, you know, immediately gratifying to them.
Sure.
And by default, sacrifice the future. But if someone's sitting there and really stepping back, and if it's important, okay, working out, right?
Yeah.
If they go through that exercise and think about, okay, so, if I start working out, or if I start working out consistently, how's this going to enhance my life, right? Yeah. I'll give you a real world situation.
Perfect.
Years ago, working for one of our clients, I was talking to a lady, one of the managers in this organization, and wonderful lady, very health conscious, good shape, but she smoked. And I remember we were sitting talking one afternoon, and she said, I've smoked now for, over 25 years. And I asked her, I said, I know that you're, health conscious, that you go to the gym, I said, I'm curious why. And, yeah. And she said, when I was a kid, my older sister smoked. And she said, and I idolized my older sister. So, I thought she was cool, So I started smoking because I wanted to be cool like my older sister. And she goes, now I'm in my mid-30s. And she goes, I don't really think it's so cool anymore,
Yeah.
She goes, but nonetheless, she goes, I can't seem to break the habit. And she had gone through all manner of things to try to overcome this. She'd been hypnotized and she'd tried acupuncture and she'd done those nicotine patches and the gum and, yeah. All of the, stuff that people go through. And she said, I find myself, I'm able to quit for a couple of weeks. And she goes, but then something happens and, I end up with a cigarette back in my hand again. So we're sitting there talking and I said to her, I asked her, I said, well, her name is Kathy. I said, Kathy, I said, if you were to, quit smoking, I said, what difference would it make in your life? And she said, my son's a teenager. And she said, I'm one of my fears is that you know, the smoking, I'm going to end up with lung cancer or something like that. And she goes, and I'm not going to, I might not be around to be able to watch my son, you know, get married. And, you know, so she said, if, you know, so she said, so quitting smoking certainly helps me in, you know, in that regard. And I said, you know, I said, well, you know, why else would it be important to, you know, quit smoking? And she's like, well, she goes, yeah, it's expensive to smoke, you know. She goes, you know, and she goes, if I look at what I spend every year just buying cigarettes, she goes, you know, it's, I could definitely find a, you know, another use for that money. And she goes, and, you know, candidly, she goes, I try not to, she said, but, you know, you know, she goes, if you smoke, people know you smoke, you smell like you smoke, you know, she goes, I wouldn't stink, my clothes wouldn't stink, you know, you know, so she goes through, you know, these reasons how her life would get better if she was to quit smoking, you know, you know, and I said, well, you know, what about the other side? You know, I said, what, you know, why is a good idea for you to keep, you know, for to keep smoking, you know, what would, if you try to slide back, you know, how would your life slide backwards if you quit smoking, you know? And she goes, you know, the one thing that I find is that when I quit, I eat more. Hmm. And, she goes, so I think that, you know, smoking kind of helps me to, you know, to keep from overeating, you know, and she goes, you know, and it also helps me to deal with my stress. You know, when I find I smoke more when I'm stressed. And, so I asked her, I said, so which of those things are you focusing more on? The benefits that you're going to gain from, you know, from quitting, or the benefits you gain from, you know, continuing smoking?
Yeah.
She's like, I never really thought about that before. I said, which is more important to you? I said, is it, you know, more important to you to, have, you know, some means to kind of relieve that immediate stress? I said, or is it more important for you to watch your son walk down the aisle? And, you know, and she's like, it's not even up for debate.
Right.
And, you know, and so I said, that's what you got to do. You got to pay attention to yourself. You know, what do you, you know, which is driving your decisions?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's super important. And I think it's true for whatever you're trying to convince yourself mm-hmm. of. For that woman, I think it's one thing to understand intellectually. You know, she has that conversation with you, and there's the window.
Yep.
Right, and there's the theme. How is it over time? You know, because she has that conversation, and she leaves that mm-hmm. that room or whatever. How is it she's going to consistently, you know, convince herself of that?
Right.
As opposed to, all right, I had the conversation, or intellectually, I got to this place where, like, all right, this side is better than that side.
Right.
And I understand that intellectually, yeah, or rationally or logically, but we don't make right. decisions logically, yeah, or rationally. So how do I get from understanding it rationally to understanding it more emotionally or, yeah, viscerally?
And that is, it really comes down to the, you know, we talked about how, you know, using themes with Ben. It's, what are the themes that we're using with ourselves?
Yeah.
And, you know, how are we, you know, how are we speaking to ourselves? How are we, you know, how are we, you know, you know, how do we sell ourselves, you know, in the value of getting in the gym? You know, how do we sell ourselves on the value of not picking up that cigarette? You know, what's the messaging we're giving to ourselves? Because if we don't give ourselves an alternative messaging, we'll default to the, you know, to the yeah, past behaviors.
Or pre-programmed.
Exactly. You know, so, I had this morning, there was on the Help a Reporter mm-hmm. thing. One of the requests from a reporter was to entrepreneurs or executives about, I'm trying to think what the wording was. something about it was, you know, something to the effect of perpetuating habits that, you know, are self-benefiting, or, you know, so it was kind of how do you make sure that you're basically protecting yourself in the process of running this business or running this company or those kinds of things.
Sure.
Right. And I remember I read that request and that was one of the things that, you know, went through my mind was the, you know, the battles that even I face, you know, in the morning there are, you know, I tend to work out, you know, first thing in the morning before I come into the office, but there's decidedly days where I feel guilty, you know, for going to the gym, and I could be in the office an hour earlier, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, sure.
And so there's that kind of tug of war that you feel.
Right.
And you have to be able to mentally override that and realize that, yeah, I could get in the office an hour earlier, but, you know, at the end of the day, the most important thing in my life is my health, because if I don't have that, nothing else matters.
You can't do any of the other stuff.
Right. And so the, you know, again, is, are you building positive or are you building negative momentum?
Right.
And, you know, and so it's, you know, you have to create those themes and you have to live with those themes, you know, in order to change the behaviors.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the questions I have.
There you go.
On persuasion. Your brain had not been completely picked. any closing thoughts or anything like that before we wrap up?
I think that, you know, from a topical standpoint, and I love the last question that you went to, you know, which was really about convincing ourselves.
Yeah.
And Joe said to me years ago, it was actually, I remember we were in the parking lot of a shopping mall, and so we're just sitting in a car having a conversation, and he said to me, he goes, you know, I've been thinking about something a lot lately. And I was like, what's that? And he said, you know, he goes, everything in life is cumulative. He goes, it's kind of my cumulative theory. And I remember we're sitting there talking about it, and that's where he really started talking to me about that concept of momentum. He goes, you know, if somebody does something one time, it doesn't really make too much of a difference, you know, as long as it's not some catastrophic thing like hurting somebody or something like that, you know. He goes, so, you know, if somebody does something once, he goes, in most cases, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. But if they do it 2, 3, 4, 5 times, you know, all of a sudden it starts making a difference. He goes, because everything is cumulative. And he said, we tend as human beings, we tend to look at things in snapshots and not think about the cumulative nature of things. And that conversation always weighed heavy in my head, because I really started to look at so many of the decisions that I was making, whether it was, you know, how I was interacting with my kids or Michelle, or, you know, the decisions I was making in my career, or how I was even treating myself, and looking at, you know, what am I accumulating here? You know, am I building positive momentum? Am I building negative momentum? Because you're always doing one or the other.
Yeah, sure.
And if you build enough of either one, it starts to matter a lot.
Yeah, it's compound interest.
Exactly. You know, and so, you know, all of those little decisions that we make, if we use that as a referencing point of, you know, all of a sudden it's like what seems like a trivial choice.
Yeah.
Has a lot more weight.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome.
Hey guys, one more thing before you take off. This is Motivational Intelligence Insider. It's just a very short, exclusive email every Monday that comes from Dave, John, and the guests on this show.
This is the only place they share their very, very best stuff, and it's delivered right to your inbox every single Monday. This could include exclusive tips for upping your game, articles they're reading, videos they're watching, stories from the road, and on and on. It's the best way to kick off your week, and this content is comes directly from Dave, John, and the guests, and is only available to subscribers of Motivational Intelligence Insider. So if you want these guys and gals to email you their best stuff, go to twological.com/insider. That's the number twological.com/insider, and drop in your email. And if you do, I hope you enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Two Logical. Two Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Two Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs, or just want to say hey, head over to twological.com.